Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast, the week of June 23rd through 30th. I'm joined this week by Karen Sue Smith, editorial director, who will be talking about her article, Courting the Latino Vote, which is appearing in the June 23rd through 30th issue. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Karen, there's a lot of different sides of this issue, so let's get right into it. Let's start with the numbers. How many Latino voters are registered to vote and in this election, and how does that compare to previous years?
Well, according to the Pew Hispanic Center, which is a source that I will be referring to and which I used quite a bit in the article because it's a non-partisan source, there are approximately 18 million registered Latino voters in 2008. And what's really important about that is that that is 4 million more than there were just in the last presidential election in 2004.
Wow.
So the point here is it's good to have a base so that we know a number, 18 million. But the real point is that the Latino population is growing so rapidly that they are expected to be 30% of the U.S. population by 2050. So that their registration and their role as voters and their role in the body politic will be increasing with every single presidential election until then, if this projection plays out.
So that's very interesting. And another interesting element of this story is that the Latino voter is becoming harder and harder to, less and less predictable in terms of their voting patterns, and they're defying traditional perceptions. Can you give an example of that?
Yes, I actually have two examples, but let's just start with what we think the traditional perception is. And for a long time, we thought of Latinos as a predictable group. They were Catholic, they were Democrats, they voted as a bloc, with the one big exception being Cubans, who tended to be the Republicans, the conservatives, and they lived way over there in Florida. We've seen that steadily change as diversity among Latinos, that is, Latinos coming from all kinds of countries in Latin and Latin America, has changed. And we've also seen a rise and then a fall in the registration of Latinos as Republicans. We've seen a rise in their independent status. We've seen a rise in evangelical Protestant Latinos. We've seen a rise in secular Latinos. Even though Latinos are primarily Mexican today, they represent all these various countries, and some of that is going to be significant in certain locations, politically significant in certain locations. There's also a huge divide today that didn't used to be because the number of immigrants has increased so recently and rapidly, and that is that even if you take Mexicans, the largest group, Mexican population is divided here between native-born Mexican-Americans whose families have been here for generations, many longer than other Americans, and the foreign-born. And that number includes the most recent immigrants, those with and without documents. My examples are Florida and then North Carolina. I mentioned in the article that Florida, which is the state with the third largest Latino population, is seeing younger Cubans supporting more liberal candidates and registering as Democrats. And this is diluting the influence of conservative anti-Castro Cubans who typically have voted Republican. We've also seen a change in Cubans as a percentage of the total Latino population of Florida. They don't even make up a majority anymore. They're about 45%. Another huge thing that we've seen, this is the first time we've really seen this, is that today Latinos in Florida are in a dead heat, party speaking. 35.5% are registered as Democrats, 35.2% are registered as Republicans, and 29% are not aligned with either party at all. So this is going to be a very interesting contest in Florida. We've also seen Latinos spreading themselves around the United States geographically. And as they move, so their influence will spread and possibly increase. We've seen them move way beyond just the Southwest and the major cities like New York, Miami, Chicago. They're now moving into the Deep South, the Midwest, and as you've just seen in Florida. So think about it. Is this surprising to you to learn that North Carolina has the fastest growing Latino population in the United States today? while there are still, Latinos are still just 2% of the eligible voters so far, and they're mostly in the bottom three groups by earning, this may also be surprising to you, that 13% of them make $100,000 a year or more in North Carolina. And so they're not very far, that group, behind North Carolinians as a whole, 16%. So they're just 3% behind the others. And most of those North Carolina Latinos are from Mexico. So doesn't that kind of shock your view of who Latinos are? This geographical spread is dependent on jobs, where the jobs are. But I think you can see that, that things are changing right there from those two examples.
Yes, that's very interesting. Now let's turn to the candidates. We now have a presumptive Democrat and Republican nominees, and John McCain. Now, John McCain seems popular with Latino voters because of his previous stance on immigration. He's one of the few Republicans who's actually been in favor of immigration reform and put his name on that bill, which eventually failed. Do you think he can hold on to that support as he seeks to rally the conservative base?
I think he can because, especially in certain places like Arizona, where he has had very strong support for many years and where people really like John McCain. But I think it will be tough in other places. One of the reasons why is because Senator Obama's views on immigration are not really very much different from John McCain's, and that's McCain at his most compassionate, or at his compassionate best. And yet, Senator Obama faces no move within his party to try to make his views stiffer, to make enforcement more of an appeal. He has a little bit in his need to attract independents, but McCain will keep facing this group within his own party wanting him to come out very strongly in ways that make enforcement the priority, and we've already seen him do it. He's already begun to speak about securing the borders first, that is the priority. And then he'll say, yes, but these people are also God's children. And he's trying to have it both ways. It's a complex issue, so he's not just making that up. But if he has to cater more and more to the right wing of his own party and away from that path to citizenship and all those proposals that he made in the bill with Senator Kennedy, then he will have to attract Latinos in some other way. And he does have access to other ways. In other words, there are other things about him that make him a strong candidate. One of them is traditional family values or traditional family language. He can always talk about conservative fiscal policy or tax cuts. He can talk about patriotism in a way that he himself defines it, which is by backing the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he can try to find a vice presidential candidate who appeals to Latinos, which if I were here, I would be trying to do that right away. He can also try to drive a wedge between Senator Obama and Latinos by saying, because they supported Hillary Clinton, he could say, well, you know, I'm your man. I understand you. I've lived here all this time. You've supported me. I know who you are. And he can also do exactly what the Republican Party did in 2004 and go directly to those Protestant male Latinos in swing states who voted for President Bush.
Now, you mentioned Barack Obama and the fact that he did not do well with Latino voters in the primaries against Hillary Clinton. Do you think that will change now that he's the presumptive nominee?
Just for the record, he did half as well as Hillary Clinton, and he did half as well among every single age group, including the youngest voters. But it still could change. If Senator Clinton were to campaign for Obama, for example, among Latinos, particularly among them, or appear in ads targeted to Latinos, urging them to vote for Obama. Or Obama can also look for a vice presidential choice with appeal to Latinos, and it doesn't necessarily mean that he has to get a Latino or find a Latino. He could, but Clinton was not a Latino either. What he can do is find people who appeal to Latinos on the issues. And this is the whole different set of people. These are the people who are independents and Democrats who care about these concerns and the way that the Democrats approach them, which would be, it would include immigration, but not stop there. It would go to economy, the war, and health care. On economy, especially for Hispanics, jobs is a huge issue. Because for immigrants in particular, jobs are critical. That's what they're here for. They need some economic security. They need some money to send home, that kind of thing. And so jobs are really, really important. One can't put too much stock in polls, but already On June 6th, the Los Angeles Times reported a Gallup poll that had been conducted in May, and it showed Obama already well ahead of McCain. In fact, doing twice as well. It showed him winning 62% of Latinos versus McCain at 29. And this is a nationwide Latino vote or projection. There were also lesser leads reported in other polls. At that same time, a New York Times poll found Obama in the lead by 14 points. Another group found him in the lead by 19 points. So not as strong, not 30 points, but still in the lead. And yet we're 5 months out.
Now, we've been watching the presidential primaries on, CNBC, MSNBC or CNN. Do you have a sense of how the Spanish media has been portraying the candidates so far?
I can't really speak for the whole Spanish media because it's just too large.
Sure.
And because I'm not a Spanish speaker, I'm not fluent in the language, and so I couldn't really track that even if I wanted to. I can tell you that there is one huge Spanish media out there, TV, radio, films, online sites. There are lots of Latino journalists and columnists, even in mainstream media, especially in the Southwest, and they do follow the election and politics in general. I tried to, in my article, give a sense of two different sides of it, though, by quoting Ruben Navarrete from the San Diego Union-Tribune, who is pro-McCain and says that it's McCain's character, his convictions, his patriotism that draw Hispanics. This is what Latinos like. But in the same article, I quote Pilar Marrero from La Opinión in Los Angeles, who finds McCain's support for the war in particular a liability, not a draw. And she thinks it's a real toss-up between Obama and McCain. She thinks the chits aren't in, nobody can call it, it's like still in the air.
Have the candidates put some money into the Spanish media? Are they advertising on these networks?
Yes, I mentioned in the article also that they are the two Democratic candidates have spent a Democratic record so far on Latino or Spanish language media. They have spent over $4 million on Spanish language ads. And by that, it looks like they must have learned something from the effective Republican communication strategy of 2004. They are absolutely cultivating Latino constituents. But both the Republicans and the Democrats will do that. They both have Latino consultants, strategists, and Latinos have set up themselves all sorts of non-partisan civic associations and also partisan associations to get out the vote and to inform the public about issues. So they are really going to be players in this election.
Now, you mentioned the LA Times columnist who is against McCain because of his stand on the Iraq War. What are the general Latino views on the war? Are there a lot of Latinos serving in the war, for example?
I did some work on this in a short piece in America, I think a couple of years ago when the study first came out, and I don't have really recent or more recent information on it. But the Pew Hispanic Center did a study on this, and they found that Hispanics were not overrepresented among the volunteer troops in Iraq in the way that, for example, African Americans certainly are. And in November, this study was in November 2006, right after the congressional election. And that was the election, you remember, when some 69% of Latinos voted for Democrats after they had just, at least some group of them, had slid toward Latinos for the two previous presidential elections. And so when they conducted this study, what they were looking to find is, why was that? And the conventional wisdom was that it was the immigration issue that brought Latinos back into the Democratic fold. But what they found was not that. They found an upset statistic or set of statistics. When they asked Latinos about their feelings toward the war, they found growing disapproval. They found that two-thirds of Latinos compared with just half of all Americans, in other words, that's a 16% difference, which is huge, favored bringing the troops home from Iraq as soon as possible. This was both Republicans and Democrats who said this. At this point in time, they found that the war trumped immigration as a concern among those voters. And this is something that Senator Obama and the Democrats could most certainly use if that's still the sentiment that's out there.
You mentioned earlier that we have this large number of Latino voters who registered to vote, but we're also looking at some states which are looking to put in more stringent voter identification requirements, such as the state of Indiana, which put in some requirements that you had to produce a passport or a birth certificate at the polling place, and this was upheld by the Supreme Court. How do you think these laws will affect the Latino voter?
Yeah, I think they may well affect Latino voters, not only Latino voters, of course, but also them. 19 states, I think it is, are in line now to pass similar types of legislation, even if they have not shown any sort of real, and by real I mean they don't have cases where they show any sort of abuse at the polls. What this kind of legislation always does is it discourages new voters, first-time voters, seniors, the poor, anybody who is easily intimidated, confused, or lacking an advocate at the polls. And one of the things that you have with Latinos is that you have a language difference. This is something very important, and it's one of the reasons why Latino participation has always lagged behind that, say, of African-American participation at the polls. It's because there's a language difference. And so every single thing has to be communicated in another language. The directions have to be communicated in another language. It has to be part of the culture to get out there and to vote, all that kind of thing. So whenever you put, whenever you make it more difficult for a person to actually vote, even if they've registered, even if they know who they want to vote for, none of that really matters until they actually get to the polling place and their vote is counted. If they get to the polling place and it's not counted, or they incur some kind of difficulty there, word will spread fast in the neighborhood. So I think that advocates at the polls in states where any kind of requirement like that are put in is going to be very, very important, and grassroots organizations will be very, very important for Latinos. They have to know what's true. I mentioned in the article also a case in Orange, California, where word was put out that if you have made any sort of mistake on your registration or whatever, this could be, and you show up to vote, this could be cause for your deportation. Well, that just scared everybody away from the polls. And you could say, well, what could anybody do about it? Because once they don't show up, the election's over. And so their vote, all the work to get people registered then is for naught.
Now, the working subtitle for this article is, it's about more than immigration. And you make the intriguing point that for Latino voters, immigration is not the number one issue, as you just mentioned, but it's not even the top three. The Iraq war and the economy, for example, are more important. Why do you think that is?
I have a couple theories, but what I want to say first is that it probably is number four, though. Yeah. And in a certain sense, it's an underlying issue. It's a defining issue. It's what I'm calling it, a defining issue for Latinos. And so I want to just mention something about that before I answer your question directly. And that is that this issue says something to them about how they're perceived, accepted, are they welcomed or not, by the rest of U.S. society. And so it's a way of measuring their current place here and their future opportunities here. Will they experience discrimination? Do they already experience it? Did they think they had overcome it, but now they're facing it again? So immigration does bind Latinos as a concern, even if they're native-born. They see how their relatives or countrymen are being regarded and treated, and they know that it reflects on them in some way. So as with civil rights, Latinos want to see fair treatment and some kind of equality. And so that's what I mean by defining, that this issue concerns them not merely as a, quote, problem, the way some people look at immigration. It's a rights issue for them, and it's a defining issue. Who are they? They're Latinos. Are they welcome or not? Why is it then, if it's such a defining issue, that it doesn't make the top of the list? Well, I think it's because Latinos are more like the rest of the body politic than they are different from it. They, too, are affected by the same issues that all Americans put at the top. The exact same. Economy number one. It used to be number two, but now it's number one. The war and health care. These things cut across the board. Everybody living here experiences the impact of these. I had already mentioned that on the economy, jobs is of real importance to Latinos, those who are immigrants because they're sending remittances home, those who have been here for a long time because this is how you pay your house payment and get along and get your kids through school. The war, because people who are Latino Americans, they're paying for it the same as everybody else is. Their children are fighting in it. Health care, because they need it just the same way everyone else does, and especially if you lose your job, then you need health care even more because of the way our health care is set up right now. It's connected to employment.
Another good point you make in this article is that it's a helpful reminder that the Latino voter it's not a homogenous group, that they have different views, and even on immigration they don't agree. What are the specific differences here?
Well, they don't agree, but they agree a lot. They don't always agree, though. They're not just a homogeneous group that all sees eye to eye. That's not true. They have the same differences as Republicans, Independents, and Democrats. Those are the basic ways that they align themselves. Now that the economy is weakening, though, there's a tendency to scapegoat immigrants, even among Latinos. They will fall into the same trap as everyone else and start to blame those people who are just new here for the problems with the economy, the problems with health, taxing the healthcare system, and so on. What you find, and this is a generalization, but it's somewhat true when you look at statistics, is that native-born Latinos are more conservative. And it just makes sense because they have more to lose. They've been here longer, they're doing well financially, they're educated, employed, they're citizens, they own their own home. Maybe they're fourth-generation Americans who've never had to crawl across the border at night. They're sorry that other people do, but now they live, let's just say, take a hypothetical case of somebody who lives in a border state. There they are, sitting with their little property, and they see poor immigrants coming from Mexico. They're crowding into the neighborhood. They're causing their property values to go down. It's a kind of a NIMBY factor. Yes, we don't want to be opposed to them, but, you know, maybe locally, though, they'll vote for tougher enforcement issues in their own area. They also may want to back something that's a longer, slower path to citizenship. So they may be for it, but they don't want it happening right now. And it depends on whether they're an employer who needs all these people for their farm. Maybe they're a rancher. Maybe they run a restaurant. Maybe they run a restaurant that sells Mexican food. So depending on what their status is here, that will shape their opinion. Some may also see, and this is a kind of a, this is a tough one because it's a social problem. They may see ill feeling and racial discrimination, rising discrimination against Latinos, which is something that they felt that their own family, their grandparents, had already faced that. They'd already overcome that. They've all now learned English. They speak English. And on this, it's very interesting because native-born Latinos support, at least in Arizona, for example, where there's so many Latinos, they support English language legislation. They want to say, oh no, we're with you. We're in the majority here. We're at least a significantly huge minority here. But they hear these accusations about immigrant crime, and they see some case, you know, covered in the newspaper, and even if it's untrue proportionally, which it is, it affects them because they wonder if their own status will be downgraded and that others will associate them with poor, less educated Mexicans. Others are just like everybody else. They see a need to control the border. They can't admit everyone. It's a legitimate argument to say, does easing enforcement restrictions cause more people to come here? Is it actually a draw? So there may be nothing personal about it. It could just be that that's their view as they logically look out on the political scene. But here's what you do find, though. The Pew data show that 70 or more, sometimes almost 80% of Latinos oppose the border fence on the border of Mexico. They oppose federal raids on employers and so on. Almost every one of those kind of issues that you could mention, it's in the 70s. So it's a pretty high consensus, but implicitly you can see that 30% either agree with it or don't have strong feelings. And so that's where the other side of it comes in. And 30% is about what the Republicans have been seeing on their good days. They get up higher than that. Republicans have got up as high as 40%. Democrats have gotten as low as 49 one time, but they're way back already. Up high in the solid majority now in terms of Latinos and their party affiliation. That's kind of where it is. And I think that if Senator Obama, for example, could take a positive approach toward Latinos, he doesn't say, I know just what it's like, I've known all of you people. He doesn't have to do that. I'm not sure that's going to go over. I'm not sure that's going to seem sincere. But if he were able to say something like, you are a people worth winning over. Look at all the gifts you bring. Look at how positive you are. Notice how much less condescending that sounds than they're also God's people. Yeah. Notice how it makes Latinos as a group see themselves with a certain pride rather than that somehow they're a group of needy victims. Now there are people who bring gifts to our whole society.
Well, thank you, Karen, for helping to explore this very complex subject. Again, the article is Courting the Latino Vote. It's in our June 23rd to 30th issue. Hope you can come again to talk more about future articles.
Thank you very much. I hope so, too.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. Just a reminder that you can respond to our podcast at our site, americamagazine.podbean.com, and we will post those and read some of them on the air as well. You can also go to that site to subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or other MP3 services. I want to thank Bill McGarvey for providing the music for this week's show. You can learn more about him at billmcgarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.